hundreds of people unlucky to be alive after a bomb placed in a packed food court in a mall in Belito failed to explode. With me is Willem Els of the Institute for Security Studies. Welcome, Willem.
Hello, Chris.
Willem, as the Senior Training Coordinator on Terrorism and Explosives Related Incidents at the Transnational Threat and International Crimes Program, has it come as a surprise to you that this bomb was placed by a 15-year-old teenager, radicalized, a lone wolf?
Yeah, Chris, I think that's a very good question. You know, for a long time, we've been warning about your prevalence of the so-called lone wolf scenario in South Africa. You know, we had quite a few attacks in the past, but the lone wolf scenario is one of your most difficult scenarios to keep a tap on in terms of intelligence, because this person tends to work alone and they function alone. They don't have a visible profile on the internet normally. And also they don't discuss their intentions with a lot of people. So the very, very first time that your intelligence will maybe pick it up is when they maybe publish a manifest like what we saw in this incident where it was placed on Telegram. And unfortunately, it seems that our intelligence service still did not pick that up. And at the end of the day, after they have been informed by the FBI about this incident that took place, they actually started to act on it.
Yes, there are so many red flags in how this case has been handled. Firstly, the boy was not arrested. The explosive device that smoked but didn't detonate was returned to his mother. And only after the FBI warned the Hawks was he placed in a psychiatric hospital for a while, but then he turned up back at the mall just the other day on the 1st of July.
Exactly. You know, if you look at your legislation, of course, we believe and we also advocate the rule of law. So, and that is also applicable to the police as well. So in terms of your legislation, if you look at the POCTATARA Act, that is your Counterterrorism Act, and also if you look at your criminal law, you know, there are some obligations on the police when something like this happens. So we see that the case was not registered. And when the mother didn't want to register the case, they actually returned the device, the explosive device, that was illegally in his possession to his mother. That was also not according to law, because now she also committed a crime. And then what we saw is, why did the mall not press any charges? Why did they not contact the police? That's also a question that we need to ask. We must remember, this is breaking news. This is unfolding. A lot of information will come to the fourth. But based on the available information, this is what we have now. The mall didn't lay charges. They didn't call the police. The parents didn't lay charges. The boy was not arrested. When the police got involved, they handed the device back and they didn't register a case. So in the correct way to handle it, it should have been notified to the police. The police should have reacted. They should have then called in the bomb disposal unit. The bomb disposal unit should have rendered that device safe. Because remember, because this device only smoked, it doesn't mean that it can still detonate. We don't know. It must be examined. And that is why they call it an improvised explosive device. It doesn't function according to any manual. It functions and is built on the ingenuity of the bomb builder. That is why the bomb technician has to reverse engineer almost this thing and make sure that it is safe before it can be moved. And so there's a red flag there. What would have happened if the people of the mall, maybe mall security, we don't know, picked up that bag that it was in the food court and detonated? You know, if you look at the fatalities in, for instance, look at Iraq, with the war and insurgents in Iraq, more than 85% of your fatalities on the Allied forces side was caused by improvised explosive devices. If you look back at the so-called Huma case in KZN, not very far from Belito, we saw that similar devices were placed in the Woolworths outlets, and they also just smoked because of what we believe was a failure or in the construction. The intention for it was to detonate. And that's why it's an improvised explosive device. And the intention of improvised explosive device, we haven't seen it, we don't know whether it was shrapnel added, et cetera, is normally to kill or maim as many people as possible. So if we think back about the so-called Pagat era, where we had more than 300 IEDs that exploded in the Cape Town area in a matter of about 2 years, we saw that the so-called, or the infamous Planet Hollywood bomb, where a British family that was also dining there, but was really, they bore the brunt of it. I know that it was a six-year-old girl, and she lost one of her legs that was just severely cut off by the debris of the shrapnel of the IED. We don't know what this one looked like. It could have happened here. And I think the way it was dealt with, there are a lot of questions to be asked, and maybe it warrants a thorough investigation by IPET.
And Willem, the boy clearly states his intent to commit mass killing in this manifesto that he published on the encrypted app, Telegram. And if that had not been passed on to the FBI by somebody, we would not have been any the wiser. They would not have contacted the Hawks. The matter wouldn't have been taken further.
Exactly. And you know, it could have happened again. We do not know what the outcome was of his treatment when he was in hospital and what the prognosis was and whether he was rehabilitated or whatever. So, but what we saw in what we know about the manifesto is that he referred back to the Columbine school shooting, the massacre that really shook America and the world. And he glorified the violence that was there. And we see that this boy, it seems from his manifesto that we know, is that he was bullied, he was outcast, and he was targeted by the other school children. And as far back as in 2024, there was an incident where he chased some people with a knife. Now, that should have been a red flag already. Why was there no action on that from the school side, from the parent side, the police, etc.? So you see, that is why I say there's a lot of red lights that are flickering here in how this incident was dealt with by everybody involved.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
And he was truly committed because he said he had found a home with extremists online. He felt understood by them.
Exactly. And you know, we see that if you look at your terrorist cases that are currently being investigated, those that have been investigated, and they'll be for court and so on, we see that your social media plays a major role when it comes to radicalizing, to facilitating, to actually also assist in the process of the radicalization of these people, and where they find then people that are like-minded, and when they get together, they start to justify their actions, etc., etc., and it just fuels it further and further. And the red light that we see there is, what is our capacity of our intelligence to put a tab on that? The FBI has got a very vibrant capacity in order to monitor these type of social media discussions, whether it is to crime, linked to crime, or whether it is linked to terrorism. So we seem, I don't think we've got that in place. And this is making maybe a wake-up call for South Africa to really look at how can we strengthen our proactive actions when it comes to this. Because, you know, if they could have picked this up before he placed the bomb, if that bomb then detonated and killed people, it could have been prevented. Fortunately, it seems that there was a defect in the construction, and that is why it only smoked and it did not detonate.
Well, the fact that he went back to the mall on the 1st of July and was arrested again on the 3rd of July indicates that he had not given up.
Yeah, I think that is a deduction we can make. He could have gone and looked at a recce where he can place his next one. We don't know what is in his mind because, as I said, it is unfolding and a lot of more information will come out But it is really alarming because once a person, if you look at the profiles of these people that have been convicted and that have also been participating in these type of events, you know, the radicalization take a period of time, but the de-radicalization of those people, it doesn't happen overnight. So what are the processes? Was he then convinced that they de-radicalized him, if we could call it that way, into not pursuing his objectives? Or what happened? So why did he go back? And why was he arrested? Did he loiter? What I'm trying to say, there's a lot of questions to be asked there. And I think only with a thorough investigation by what I believe should be IPED, because I think the police here did not act in the right way in terms of their standing operations as well as the standing operation procedures. Instead, also not in terms of enforcing and investigating law, because this is a crime. It's a crime in two of our legislations, and it's very serious crimes. If you look at your Criminal Law Act, you know, I think the minimum sentence there is 15 years imprisonment. So it is not a misdemeanor. It is a serious crime.
Well, Willem, I think you can tell viewers from what you know and from your engagement with international terrorism experts how big the threat on South African soil really is and how local authorities have not really taken that on board.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the recent history, we have a serious challenge. And we really have a challenge when it comes to intelligence. We've been saying that for a long time. It came out in the 2021 insurrections and so on, where crime intelligence really came under scrutiny. We do not have the capacity that we're supposed to have. Now, intelligence is the only thing that can help your decision makers, your lawmakers, etc., to act and to plan proactively. And without that, they are actually working blind. And so we saw that over the past years, in recent years, there were several cases that these cells have been arrested. The first one that was actually resulted in a conviction and not too long ago was the so-called Saunders case, where the Saunders couple were kidnapped in KwaZulu-Natal by Del Vecchio and Fatima and a guy from Malawi called, I think, Bazooka, if I'm not mistaken. And unfortunately, it seems that they were only charged under the criminal law and not under the Pokutara Act. And otherwise, we would have had a very good conviction on terrorism, because at the end of the day, everything they did pointed towards terror funding. Everything that they wanted to do and that they planned was to gather funds and to channel it towards ISIS. And while that case was still ongoing, there was a person arrested in Rotterdam, and he was Mohammed G. And he was convicted and sentenced to prison for terror funding, because he used the credit card credentials of the lady Saunders in order to buy bitcoins and to send it to ISIS. So that would have been a very good case for South Africa. We also have the Huma case, or the so-called Huma case of extortion down in Durban, eventually due to botched police investigations and also the prosecution. It was kicked, struck off the roll. And that is a real, it's a sad day in the history of South African law enforcement. So that is something that we should not ignore. But then parallel to that, there's a case here in Klip River near Cape Town, where a cell have been arrested. Some of the people of the Huma cell were also arrested with this cell, and that case is still before court. Then we have a court case that went to court late last week. It's called, they refer to it as a Sharia law case, where a lot of radicals were arrested, where they of extortion, terrorism. I think the other cases were the terror funding and so on, where they actually had a parallel system that they started to extort people in terms of the Sharia law in Johannesburg, and they wanted to enforce Sharia law, but also that the money gathered, it seems that they wanted to channel that toward terror funding. So South Africa is not immune. We haven't had a major attack in recent years, but the conditions in South Africa are conducive for these groups to operate, to gather funds. Well, that's why we saw about six people or people of interest were actually designated and blacklisted by the U.S. Treasury in South Africa for terror funding. But also, a very interesting one of them have been flagged that he commits organized crime and then use the proceeds of the organized crime, that is your bank robberies or your robberies of people, extortion, etc., and then they channel that towards ISIS. So that is the current situation in South Africa.
Thank you very much. That was Willem Els of the Institute for Security Studies speaking to BizNews, and I'm Christine.
Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now. In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC 9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description.